Coco, everyone.
Oh, splendid.
Violet, who is that very good-looking man? Well, you must know. Why would I ask? That's my latest lion. I've got him here tonight to tell us stories.
He's some sort of congenital liar? The handsome ones so often are, aren't they?
No, he's Hugh Geoffrey Wallace. He wrote True Tales of the Uncanny. I thought he'd be perfect for the occasion. All sitting round the fire, Christmas just a week away.
Mm.
What is it?
Nothing.
What's the matter?
So he's Wallace, is he?
Sissy, what have you done?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't review it.
Among others, I thought I'd see what all the fuss was about. I sent it into the Free Woman last month. I don't know if they published it.
Of course they will have published it. What did you say?
I was rather pleased with myself, actually. My favourite bit went something like this. Perhaps the most unpleasant aspect of True Tales of the Uncanny is the sex obsession which its author exhibits at every conceivable opportunity and which lies clotted on the supernatural-like cold white sauce.
Oh, Sissy!
It'll be quite all right. Just don't introduce me.
Well, keep very quiet or I shall.
Ah, Hugh, come along.
What?
Well, the fire is bright, the gas is low, the guests are gathered. You've got to sing for your supper.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, yes, Mr. Wallace. Do please tell us a tale.
My dear Miss Violet, I'm not sure I have anything to hand.
Oh, but you must. Just a little one. To please me. Oh, really?
Well, all right.
Very good.
Bravo, Mr. Wallace.
There is a little story I could tell.
Is it true?
You mustn't ask that, Violet. Mr. Wallace might expect us to enjoy such a story, but he surely won't expect us to believe it.
I can only speak for myself, but I would suggest that one cannot tell a good ghost story without admitting at least the possibility of such happenings. You need the audience to say, if I'm not very careful, something of the sort may happen to me.
So it is true?
It was told by someone I knew well. I knew his circumstances. He was as down to earth as a man can be. He had a cousin, Rufus, and the two of them quarrelled over a woman.
More for them.
Who was this man?
A friend of the family. He was a soldier. Not a man I would have thought susceptible to mere suggestion. A friend of my grandfather.
A friend of a friend and so on. It's always someone else's story, isn't it?
Sissy.
It happened to him. Although I will say it happened a very long time ago. He was a very old man when he told it to me. And I was a boy. He told it me one night shortly before he died. And it all began with this quarrel with his cousin, Rufus. I heard it from his own lips.
Rufus was handsome, but he had a temper. Women liked him, and he was always lucky. We quarreled at a fancy dress ball over some girl. We fought a duel at sunrise. We were a strange-looking group, fresh from the heat and noise of the assembly, still in our costumes.
Gentlemen, to your places, please.
I was a Pierrot with a pistol. Rufus was wearing a hunting costume, copied from a portrait of an ancestor.
You may fire, on my word.
The rising sun shone red on Rufus's face. He still had a bruise on his cheek from my fist.
Fire!
Rufus's bullet went wide. Mine found its mark.
Cousin, forgive me, I am sorry.
Hector, listen to me. I'm dying, but I'm not finished. They will bury me and people will talk about this and then forget it. But we are not finished. I will be with you when you don't look for me. I will come between you and all that you hold dear. My will is strong, Hector. And it is my will to haunt you when I am dead. So this is not goodbye, Hector. This is merely au revoir.
I had to leave the country for a while. That was the form. And when I came back, the woman over whom we had fought had forgotten all about me. I kept away from society. I was sick of the world, and of women, and my own foolish notions of honour. I lodged with an old friend, an officer who had taken me under his wing when I first joined my regiment. He was retired, not wealthy, and he had an only daughter, a lovely girl. She cared for me, and her love put my life back on its proper course. After a while, we were married, and we moved to a place in the country, very quiet, very far from the city. And we had 6 months of great happiness.
Hector?
Yes, my dear?
Which do you think is the nearest house to ours? I mean, of society.
Well, there aren't any. The nearest people like that are way over across the river. You know that.
Yes, but I thought there might be someone else.
Someone else? What do you mean?
It's nothing.
No, I don't believe it's nothing. Tell me, please.
It's just that I've seen a man. I was out for a walk in the wood. I sat down to read, looked up from my book and saw him. He was standing a little way off, watching me silently. When I raised my eyes again, he was gone. He seemed a gentleman. I just thought...
You saw him once?
More than once.
Twice, then?
I see him every day.
What?
Sometimes under the trees, sometimes by the pool. You know how fond I am of that spot where the stream comes out. I've seen him there every morning. I just look up from my book, and there he is. He must come and go very quietly. I never hear him.
What does he... Has he spoken to you?
I've almost wished that he would. It is so strange to see him standing so silently there.
Some insolent fellow. Perhaps it's a gypsy.
No, he isn't a gypsy. He has an air of... Well, of a gentleman.
Young or old?
Young. Quite handsome.
Hmm. Well, I shall ask in the village.
But I could hear of no one. For a week I accompanied my wife on her walks and we saw nothing.
I'm beginning to think this man is a figment of your romantic brain.
Whatever he is, I think I will walk only in our garden for a while, and then he cannot trouble me.
Capital notion.
I made sure no intruder could enter our garden without being seen, and for some time I heard no more of the handsome stranger. Indeed, I dismissed all thought of him, because my wife's health began to suffer. She seemed... slowly to be weighed down by a dreadful melancholy.
Something must be troubling you.
No.
Surely.
What reason could there be?
Oh, my dear.
Oh, please forgive my sadness. You must think of it as a misfortune, not a fault.
Well, at least it has stopped us worrying about that strange visitor.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, not exactly.
What? Have you seen him again?
I see him every day. Hector, it is killing me.
Then, Doctor, have you seen enough of her to form an opinion?
Yes, Ample. I assure you, your wife is not mad.
Oh, thank God.
But I understand your anxiety. As you say, she does seem to be affected by a particular delusion. But she's so reasonable in all other points that she can scarcely be troubled by a mania. And she spoke of this man so clearly and calmly, I am almost inclined to think that she really sees the person of whom she speaks.
I don't think that can be possible.
But she describes him so clearly. In my patients, such imaginings are always more or less disjointed. But she described him as clearly and calmly as I am speaking to you now, and in such detail. Are you sure no one could have come into the garden?
I may very sure.
And... is there no hanger-on, no local figure who fits her description? The pale face, the old-fashioned clothes. A hunting costume, she said. A mark on his cheek.
Oh, God. It's him.
I took my wife up to town, and I showed her his portrait.
It's him. Oh, Hector.
You're sure?
I tell you, it's him.
I took her away. I thought we might outdistance him. I took her way across the continent. But wherever we went, he followed. He never showed himself to me. That would have been a poorer revenge. was my innocent wife who was the victim of his malignant presence. He destroyed her health and her life while I watched helplessly. I could not comfort her. I could not protect her.
He will not let me be at peace. He comes between us. He's standing between us now. I can see his face as plain as yours. He is killing me. Hector, I must tell you something.
What is it, my dear?
When he first came to me, in the wood, his presence bewildered and distressed me, and I shrank from him. But when he came again, and again, I found myself thinking of him, and then watching for him. His image haunted me. I could not shut it out of my mind. When I did not see him, I found that life seemed dreary without him. I began to long for his return. I counted the hours between his visits. He took all other pleasures from me. My only delight was to see him. Oh, Hector, forgive me. For all this time, I have lived to see him. I don't know if it comes from some witchcraft or from the baseness of my own heart. I could not stop this wicked feeling.
Her health sank. She lost the will to live. On the last night, I held her hand and comforted her as best I could. But she died, sobbing and afraid.
He is here. God, help me. Hector. Oh, he is lying by my side. God, help me.
What a nasty little story.
Why so?
The implication that a woman has no control over her affections.
She was tricked, you might say.
That's little better than supernatural rape.
It's only a story.
A true one, according to your rigmarole.
Have we been introduced?
No. Thank you ever so much, Mr. Wallace. We all enjoyed that so much.
Yes, yeah, jolly good.
Cicely Fairfield. You might know me by my pen name.
You write?
I review. For The Free Woman. As Rebecca West.
More to drink, anyone?
Perhaps the most unpleasant aspect of True Tales of the Uncanny is the sex obsession which its author exhibits at every conceivable opportunity and which lies clotted on the supernatural like cold white sauce.
I cannot tell a lie. I did it with my little hatchet.
You seem to hold me responsible for these stories.
Why not? Were they ghost written?
I gave them shape, I grant you. But I don't think I can be blamed for adding cold white sauce. And I see no reason to disbelieve the people who told me them.
You believe in your, I beg your pardon, their ghosts?
You cannot have a ghost story without a ghost.
I think you can.
Well, there's no point in making such a claim unless you're prepared to substantiate it. Could such a story be told?
Yes, I could tell it.